The following is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. John White by Libby Frost for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted on June 29, 1978 at Mr. White's home near Crab Orchard, Kentucky at approximately 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Testing, testing. Mr. White, could you state your full name and where you were born?
John Coleman White, and I was born in a mile and a half of Crab Orchard, Kentucky, Lincoln County.
Who were your parents?
Robert C. White and Catherine Horton.
What are some of your first memories of Crab Orchard?
Well, I started a school there, of course, and went to school through high school there. And when I first knew it, there weren't any cars in Lincoln County. And you rode a horseback or drove a pair of mules to a wagon, buggy, or horse-drawn transportation's all we had. Mm-hmm. Of course, I guess it was 19 and 16 or something before there was even a car that I knew of in Lincoln County. I was eight or 9 years old. I was born in 1909.
Mm-hmm. Is the school still standing where you went?
Oh, no. It burned when I was in second grade.
Oh. Who was your teacher, do you remember?
Mary Gray. She wasn't raised there, but her mother was.
Did you go to school for 9 months?
Yes, I believe they had 9 months of school. Seven, eight? Seven, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters and one brother.
What did your father do?
Well, he farmed, and then he was an undertaking business. Ran a paint store. Mm-hmm. Started out at Crab Orchard Water.
Could you tell me about that? What your father did with the water at Crab Orchard?
Well, this mineral water, they evaporated it in large pans with wood fire under it. And when they reduced it about one to one-tenth, they bottled it under White's concentrated water. And it was a laxative similar to Epsom salts. And then to be more convenient, they reduced it farther till it made a sauce like Epsom salts. And it was darker. It was kind of a light brown sugar color. And it would melt right back in water.
Was that bottled then?
Well, it was put in packages. Water was merchandised in bottles, sold through drugstores and stores. In the opinion of everyone that ever used it, is much better than any laxative of that day, and much better than Epsom salts.
How widely distributed was White's concentrate?
Well, I know he sold it in Missouri, Tennessee, Kansas, and Ohio. I just don't remember exactly how far. They made that up until about 1922 when he sold it. And the man he sold it to made it for some 8 or 10 years after that. But now it's not made anymore. These wells were dug in kind of a blue clay outcropping. If livestock had access to that water, they drank it, prefer it over any kind it was.
Did it seem to have any effect on them, or
just not? No, but a lot of people would come and get that water in jugs and keep it and drink it. It had a kind of a bitter taste to it.
Are these wells still around here today?
There is some evidence of them, but there's none being pumped now. Mm-hmm. None of them are kept up, maintained. You can see evidence of them. Mm-hmm.
But the water would still be there.
Would be there if it mm-hmm. was gone after.
Mm-hmm. You said someone tried to sell a similar product?
Well, the man we sold it to decided he would add Epsom salts. He was trying to get $1 a pound to this crab orchard sauce, and he put some 10-cent a pound Epsom salts with it. It'd be a little better, and the Food and Drug Act got in. It cost him a lot of money, and that stopped the whole deal right there.
Did you help your father produce this?
Well, when we were actively doing that, I was small and didn't help that much. We'd have somebody cut wood in 4-foot lengths, split it enough that they could handle it to get it in under the furnace. And it took several days to evaporate that water. Mm-hmm.
But do you remember all the things that it cured? It just cured everything.
Well,
even doctors and artists.
Mainly, it was laxative.
Well, is that what it was?
Did doctors around here buy your product?
Well, evidently, we have a testimony.
Sick headache, constipation.
Nanny, you'll be on tape.
They've got on this paper of testimonials that Governor Luke Blackburn is giving a testimonial to it.
Is he the Tennessee governor?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Dr. Doers.
Dr. Fagan endorsed it.
Do you recall some of the doctors who worked around Crab Orchard early in the century?
Well, the main one I knew was Dr. Willie J. Edmonston. And at one time, there was 5 doctors in Crab Orchard.
Yeah.
They covered a wide area, horse and buggy.
Delivered a baby for $10 in your home.
You said
that,
no.
They're any closer in Lexington or Louisville?
Berea.
There might have been one in Berea too. But.
You said your father was also an undertaker.
They sold handles and things that people used and made wooden coffins, or made homemade coffins a lot. And he sold the handles, and they had a horse-drawn hearse. The first motorized hearse I ever saw was in 1917. The owner of the Crab Orchard Springs Hotel, Joe Willis, died. He was a native of Nicholasville, and they came from Nicholasville with the horse-drawn hearse, and we always went out. We went on a hill, probably a quarter of a mile on the highway, to see that hearse pass.
Mm-hmm. Was that for respect of Mr. Willis, or to see the car?
really, it was for both. Because we went to the same church that Mr. Willis went to, and then the kids were small. We didn't go to the funeral, but we went out there and very curious to see it. motor hearse.
Yeah. What are your memories of Crab Orchard Springs?
Well, I was there for quite a round lot. They had a golf course, and horseback riding, swimming, fishing, and whatnot. And one of the most vivid memories was in 1930. They had the National Fox Hunters Association, and I believe they were there in 27 states. And I would get up early in the morning, like 2:30, go to the barn at the hotel, and saddle up 8 or 10 or 12 horses for different people, like Lynn Schaus, from manager of the Phoenix Hotel in Lexington, and others in his group, and take them for miles to where they were going to have the hunt, and they'd come out later in the morning by daylight in cars. And there were several of us doing that. We'd take the horses out and build us up a big fire, and they'd come out about daylight and turn the dogs loose. And my brother, 8 years younger than I was, but he's big enough, I'd take 8 or 10 horses in time together and lead them. And he'd ride one and get behind us to start them, keep them going. We'd ride out maybe 8 or 10 miles in the dark to get the hunt ground so they could come. And they followed the hounds with the horses as best they could.
Where were the hounds kept?
Well, you see, they were brought in. Each individual that brought to the hunt bring his own dogs, and they put painted numbers on the side of the dog. And there's three judges that rode with after the hounds, and they decided the winner in each category. And these dogs could have been from any one of the 20 odd states represented.
The dog was the winner then, the dog that did the best job?
The dog that stayed in the lead for the most in time. One morning, on the adjoining farm where my brother lives now, they were going to turn their young dogs loose, Derby dogs. And around the fire, they had this in October in cool weather, frosty weather. And there was an old red shepherd dog there that belonged to a man as this county road intersected with the highway. And as they turned these young dogs loose, several of them went running off down toward the woods, and some of them around through the crowd. They weren't as experienced as they should have been. And directly that shepherd dog decided maybe he should go home, and some of those young hounds started running him, just baying him like they would a fox. And it was about 135-140 dogs in that bunch. And they all came right back in the race, ran that dog home, so he went under the floor. They just started running one of the leaders, I guess. And they run clear into Rockcastle County after the chasing the dogs. It took them 2 or 3 weeks to catch all their dogs.
You said Derby dogs. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's a term of fox. I believe that's what they call them. Well, it's the young dogs. They had to be of a certain age.
Who are some of the people around here who raised hunting dogs?
The Walkers. They started the Walker Foxhound. They were from Garrett and Madison County, but there's one lives right here at the intersection in that brick house we showed. And the hounds bear their name, the Walker Foxhound. And there were homes that had dogs, and Dixon's and Burge, Tom Stigall.
Did your family raise any dogs? Or?
No, we never did honey.
Who are some of the other people that would come down here to hunt?
Well, one of them that I knew well was Sam Woolridge from Versailles. And I took his horses out to the hunt ground and in his party. And he was one of the leaders in the state and national, as Lynn Shouse was in the on the national board. And he ran the Phoenix and Lafayette hotels in Lexington. And one morning, Mr. Woolridge asked me to go on the hunt. He said the people that I had some horses out there for, two or three horses, got a little too much to drink the night before and wouldn't be there and wanted me to go with him. And we were hunting in the vicinity of, and we're right on the banks of Dix River. And the dogs had struck a fox in the cedar country up above the river and had gone down and crossed the river and were running on the other side in a long bottom that belonged to the Jess Lawrence at that time. And he asked me how deep that river was there. And I told him I had no idea, but it looked awful deep. Well, he said he had to get the hounds. He was one of the judges. And he just, he was, Mr. Woolridge was a man, must have been 6'6 or 7, and he'd weighed 280. And he had a great big, tall horse. He turned that horse around and read about 50 yards away from the river and just turned around and spurred him, and that horse ran right at that river and jumped right off in it. And they went down under the water enough that it even splashed that red cap that Mr. Woolridge off. They went down and he finally, the horse got out on the other side, and I got me a stick and a long pole and fished his cap out, and that's as far as I went. I didn't think I had to go to him.
What was the? I'm not that familiar with fox hunting. Where did the fox come from? Was it just one sided or?
Well, they leave tracks. The dogs run by smell, mm-hmm. And they unless they've run a while and get right on a fox, they run by smell only, and they're slower than a fox. And the fox will try to play, will play tricks on them. They'll go to water and run the water to lose them. They'll, used to be rail fences around, and they'll jump up on a rail fence and walk those rails, and they'll lose the hounds. They'll climb up on a cliff or something and jump off to break the scent, and they'll lose the dogs. A fox that's been run enjoys it.
What happens when the fox is cornered then?
Well, if they ever corner one, they'll kill it, but that doesn't happen too often. They usually outwit the hounds and get away from them. As smarter dogs will stay, and the ones that are really determined will stay in longer when they get down to a few, just a very few, or one individual, they'll just more or less give up. The fox usually gets away.
After you finished school here at Crab Orchard, what did you do then?
Well, the first year I was out of high school, there was an elderly gentleman that had two sons about my age, one a year older and one a year younger, and we followed the wheat harvest. And we started in Kansas and followed the harvest all the way into Canada. I worked 3 or 4 days in Canada, and it started snowing in September. We came back to the States. We came back down, we went on, we thrashed in Washington State before we went into Canada. We went in the very western corner of Canada. We came back down in Oregon, and I picked prunes for plums for prunes 2 or 3 days, and Yakima, we picked apples in Yakima and Wenatchee Valley for a week or two, and then came on down and picked prunes, came back through California and Arizona. He had brothers and sisters in California, and I had several aunts. Then in Arizona, I had some people. He had a brother in Arizona. We just visited and came back through Texas and Arkansas and back in. It was gone about 4 months. I came back with $32 more than I left with.
Yeah. What did you get paid for working threshing all day?
Well, at the height of it, we got about $5 a day and 5 meals a day. The day started as soon as you could see and ended when you couldn't. And we ate breakfast before we started to work in the dark. And 9 o'clock or something, they'd feed us lunch. And we'd take off at noon for a few minutes and eat. And in the middle of the afternoon, well, 4 or 5 o'clock, they'd feed us again when we worked at 8 or 9 o'clock. I was putting in 16, 17 hours a day for a $5 bill yet. That was big money.
How did you locate the places to work?
Well, the harvest, the wheat will start ripening in the south first. And we would just go along, and you see anybody in operation. And they had employment agencies that they didn't charge anything. It was just there as a courtesy to get the worker and the producer together. We went through Nebraska and Wyoming, North Dakota, in Idaho, Washington. Then they had to cut this wheat with a binder and shock it, cut it, tied it in bundles, and then we had to haul it on a wagon to the thrasher using steam engines, 1927.
How are you traveling from place to place?
In a 1922 Model T Ford that we worked over for our own convenience. We had some tarpaulins that we could tie over the car and back toward the ground and make a tent to sleep under. We had a little Coleman gas stove, and of course when we were working, they fed us. But when we were just traveling, we did our own cooking and stayed and slept on the ground. And this car, those old Model T's, had three bands in the transmission. And as they'd wear out, they had to be replaced. And there's no telling how many sets of bands we put in that car. We went over several mountain ranges. And it was the only Model T at that time that had ever been on that tallest peak in the Yellowstone Park. And the way we got it up there, we let Mr. Giesel drive, and the three boys got out and pushed. And we'd give out, we'd just pull over beside the road. It was right at the 1st of August. And we got up on that peak, and there was a heavy snowstorm for about 15 minutes.
Really?
There was a half inch of snow on the ground.
How do you know yours was the first Model T.
Well, the employees of the park told us when we started up there, we'd never make it, so it never has been a Model T up there. And it wouldn't pull it. It wouldn't pull itself. We had, the three boys had to push. I never worked any harder for 2 hours and a half than I did trying to push that thing up that hill.
I should have a plaque up there for you.
I signed the guest register when I was on top of it.
This was in 1927. That was right before, well, the 30s and the Depression period and the Dust Bowl and all that.
And in 1929, a boy at Crab Orchard that I went to school with, Frank Seven, himself, we went to Arizona. And he worked for the O'Malley Lumber Company on the roofing department. And I got a job with the Forest Service. And most of the year part of the year I was out in the forest. But off season sometimes in the middle of the winter I'd come in. I did work for the O'Malley Lumber Company a little bit. I worked there until 1933. Came back. I have more relatives in Arizona than I do in Kentucky. I had an aunt with 10 children and a widow. I went to Arizona 1910 and homesteaded. And I had an uncle and two, and my dad's half brothers went to Arizona and homesteaded. And their children are all in Arizona or moved to California.
Did they come from Lincoln County or originally?
Yes. My family never did marry early. My grandfather came from Tazewell, Tennessee to Crab Orchard in the spring of 1862. And Dad was born in 67. And I was born in 1909. I don't know how old he was when he married, but he must have been close to 40. And I was 32 years old when I married. And you see, my dad would have been 110 this, 111 this, or would have been, will be, a, would have been 111 the second day of September, kind of. So there's quite a age gap.